Indiana University. We're on the web at amomentofscience.org. I'm Don Glass.
WILL programs are made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, offering more than 3,000 certified organic products, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar and bulk foods department, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
Let's take a look now at sports. The U.S. Olympic hockey team is getting a day of rest after last night's 5-3 win over Canada. Patrick Kane of the Chicago Blackhawks and the rest of the Americans are off until Wednesday when they face either Switzerland or Belarus. The Canadian team with Blackhawks Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, and Brent Seabrook must defeat Germany tomorrow for a berth in the quarterfinals. The Chicago Bulls have won four straight since the All-Star break. They go for five tonight in the nation's capital against the Washington Wizards. The Bulls scored a season high on Saturday night's 122-90 blowout of the Philadelphia 76ers. And the Indiana Pacers will try to avoid losing to the Mavericks for the fifth straight time when they visit Dallas tonight. The Mavs have won 8 of 9 overall against the Pacers, who are 19-36 coming off a win at Houston that snapped a four-game losing streak. That's sports.
We had the opportunity to bring some inner-city youth out to the park and give them an opportunity to see things that the general public probably won't get to do in the park, but also what the general public can do. Kids that had never been out in a canoe or shot a gun or held a geese, it was a hands-on experience from them, and they went from being scared to being active participants.
I would say it made me look at what I was doing, like when I would just throw a chip bag out the car or a piece of gum to the grass, what it could do to the animals if they were to get a hold to it and how it could affect their lives.
WILL provided the overall management of the whole program. They were the push behind everybody. My name is John Hott, and I'm the site superintendent of Kickapoo State Park, and WILL is my source for great community partnership.
When Forbes magazine ranked states by their greenness, the usual suspects topped the list: Vermont, Oregon, and Washington. 7 out of the 10 least green states were in the South. But as Tanya Ott reports, there's a growing green movement in the South, and some of its members might surprise you.
I'm standing in a vacant lot in downtown Birmingham, Alabama. We've got overgrown weeds, a little bit of construction going on in the distance, a lot of warehouses that really don't look like they've been used in recent years. Really not a whole lot going on here. But James Smith sees something entirely different. He's president of an international company called Green Building Focus. When he looks at this lot, he sees an untapped market. He wants to build an eco-industrial park here.
There are many companies out there in other parts of the country who want to have access to the southeastern market. They realize it's one of the fastest growing markets in the country. And if you draw a 500-mile radius around Birmingham, you hit every major developing area in the southeast. It's really the ideal location geographically to become a regional manufacturing hub for sustainable products.
Alabama, a green hub of the South? This is the land of megachurches and Republicans, not environmentalists.
The federal trend over the last 10 years has been, you know, if you're a Republican, you can't be an environmentalist.
That's Gil Rogers. He's an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. He says nationally, Republicans get a bad rap for denying climate change and trying to roll back the endangered species list. But at the state and local level, things are often different in the South.
We have a lot of Republican champions, as an example, in the Georgia legislature that are Republicans in terms of wanting lower taxes and less government intrusion into a lot of aspects of life. But then we'll go and realize that there needs to be more done in the way of environmental protection of water resources or of air quality, that those have real public health impacts.
Rogers says these leaders often have strong ties to their own piece of nature, maybe a stretch of land or a river.
I'm a tree-hugging conservative Republican, which I know some people may say that's an oxymoron, but
but Charlie Hauser loves Magnolia River. He fires up his pontoon boat to give me a tour. Hauser grew up here in Magnolia Springs, Alabama. When he moved back to retire, he worried about what he saw.
So I didn't see the seabed grass, you know, we lost blue crabs here. We lost pike.
He blames agricultural runoff full of chemicals. So Mayor Hauser and the mostly Republican town council passed really tough land use rules. All new buildings have to set back 75 feet from the river. New subdivisions have to keep their runoff on site. And it's working. The brown pelicans are back and the river is less cloudy. The state has named Magnolia River an Alabama Outstanding Waterway. Gil Rogers with the Southern Environmental Law Center says there are still big environmental threats in the South, coal mining, timber, and other industries. But he's optimistic.
People have started to recognize that there are some real threats from population growth, poor development patterns. So I do think there is a movement here that is going on, and it's unique to the South, I think, in a lot of ways.
Certainly, it's creating some interesting alliances, like environmentalists teaming up with hunters. It's a small sign that conservative and conservation are a little closer than they once were in the South. For the Environment Report, I'm Tanya Ott.
It's 2:46. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. In this portion of the program, we'll take a look at electronic waste, or e-waste, how the problem is being addressed, and what we can do to be part of the solution. There are a couple of events coming up we'd like to tell you about. An e-waste collection in Champaign County, a sustainable electronics symposium, and an international competition for repurposing e-waste in productive and innovative ways. My guests are Susan Monty. She is the Champaign County Recycling Coordinator. Amy Cade, she is a recent alumna. She's a recent grad of the U of I, now working for the Illinois Sustainability Center. She participated in last year's e-waste design competition, and she's involved in the upcoming symposium. And William Bullock is with us as well this afternoon. He's a professor of industrial design at the University of Illinois. He teaches a class involving e-waste, and they're partnering with Champaign County on the e-waste collection. Welcome to you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Well, Susan, I want to start with you because I know that there are a lot of us out there that have things stacked up that we wait for an event like this to bring them in to dispose of our e-waste properly. So when and where will the e-waste collection take place?
The Champaign County Regional Planning Commission is coordinating an electronics waste collection for residents of the county or other residents. Anyone who drops off items can do so this Saturday, February 27th. There is a list of acceptable items, and we are only accepting certain items such as televisions, computers, laptops. There's a list here of about 17 items, printers, scanners. For the complete list, you would go to our website at www.rpc.org. It's www.ccrpc.org.
Okay.
So this is the first of four such collections that will occur during 2010. And the collection location is the News Cassette Distribution Center located on Apollo Drive, which is in the industrial park located along Market Street, which runs north-south parallel to the Marketplace Mall. There will be plenty of signage this Saturday. The event runs between 8 and 1 in the afternoon.
Is there any cost to participate?
There is a limit of 10 items, but no cost to drop off 10 items, 10 acceptable electronics items.
Okay. And again, the website is www.ccrpc.org. Well, now to Professor Bullock, will some of what is collected at this event be of use to students taking part in the e-waste competition?
Yes, will support our efforts. And we teach a class, which is both a survey class and a design experience class involving the issue of electronic waste and e-waste. And the portion of the class is a lecture class to learn about the issues and the policies involved in this important issue. And the second part of the class is a design experience involving teams of students from different majors around the university who can make useful products with what previously was e-waste or discarded electronic components.
Is there a lot of interest in this particular course? I would think that this is just a growing field.
There is. This is the first time we've offered the particular class in this way as both a survey class and a design experience class. And we have a good group of students from across the university, close to, I'm not sure what the exact enrollment, it's around 80 students, I would say, from across the university that have enrolled in this particular class. And we have been able, fortunately, to partner with the county who is running their e-waste collection event. And so students from the class are going to volunteer and help out with other county and city volunteers in the collection event. And then the company that has been contracted with to do the collection has offered electronic waste to the students in the class so they can have a number of components and things to work with depending on their creative design ideas that they have in class.
Now, this year the competition is international. How does it work?
That's very true. We tried it to get our feet wet last year and just restricted it to the University of Illinois. Had great success, we felt, and great interest. Some of the sponsors were interested in the possibility of taking this to the international level, and it made a lot of sense because it's truly an international problem. In fact, much of our in the Western world's electronic waste winds up in the lesser developed countries around the world. And so we thought, what better way to illustrate that there is value in this material that should not be thrown away? And what better way to illustrate that than to have some of the brightest minds around the world, young students and young professionals, to illustrate what they can do with this material.
Now, do you have a website that people can access for all the particulars about the competition?
We do. It's www.ewaste.illinois.edu.
Okay. Now,
and now that's for the rules for this year's international competition.
Okay.
But on that home page, there is a link back to the results of 2009, and I think most people would be pleased to see some of the exciting things that the student teams did last year with this material.
Speaking of 2009, next we go to Amy Cade. You were a contestant last year. What did your team do with the challenge?
We took a motor of a hard drive, attached it to a bike, and had it kind of hit the wheel of the bike so that it transferred the energy from the bike into stored energy, and then we used it to light up a light bulb. It could be used to power, charge your cell phone or something like that. Yeah, it was
okay.
A cool project.
Right. What can you give us maybe a sense, Amy, of the entries last year and the creativity of the students who took part?
Yeah, there was a wide variety of entries. There was a supercomputer, which was really impressive. A kiosk that was one of the winners, I think, where they housed an old CPU, but made it very sleek for travelers. It was supposed to go in centrals in cities, and you could find a place to eat or place to shop or something. And so, yeah, there were a lot of neat ideas.
Okay. And would you tell us about the symposium that's coming up this week?
Yeah. So now I work for the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center, which is part of campus. It's part of the Institute of Natural Resource Sustainability. And we're partnering with William and his class. We're hosting a symposium tomorrow, actually, and Wednesday. We started a new initiative called the Sustainable Electronics Initiative. So that will be hosting a pretty impressive symposium with some great speakers tomorrow at the I Hotel. So we're looking forward to that event.
Is that open to the public?
It is. There's a lot of people have already signed up, so there's very limited places available. But yeah, if you're really interested and I think walk in, then then we could probably accommodate you.
Yeah. Okay, very good. And what can you tell us? So tell us just a little bit. We don't have a lot of time. What the university is doing in regards to e-waste.
Well, with this new sustainable electronics initiative, we're trying to address the entire system of e-waste from the making of electronics to the collecting and just seeing where we can contribute our efforts. So we've teamed up with a lot of corporations and refurbishers and we're trying to see where we can help the problem as best we can.
Yeah, okay. And let's go back to Susan Monti. What can consumers do to lighten the load here? Participate in an event like a collection event. Are there other things that the county is looking into as far as, being better citizens for the planet Earth?
Sure. With regard to electronics reuse, we have contracted with a company that is refurbishing much of this material. So there's always opportunities locally to reuse as well as recycle.
Okay.
So we would encourage people to look into options for reusing materials and, bottom line, keeping these items out of the landfill.
Right. Okay. So there we have it. We covered a lot of territory this afternoon. And let me share with our listeners once again the websites that we mentioned, www.ccrpc.org. That's information on the collection event that's coming up Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the News Gazette Distribution Center. And then also lots of information at this website, ewaste.illinois.edu. Thanks to Susan Monti, William Bullock, and Amy Cade.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Earth and Sky.
Radiation can provide injury to humans. At rather low doses of radiation, there's the possibility that an individual could develop cancer.
You're listening to radiation physicist Thomas Borak of Colorado State University. With support from the National Space Biomedical Research Institute, Dr. Borak is developing a device to monitor and warn astronauts of radiation in space during extended missions.
The air is concerned that they would develop a cancer, and if they're exposed while they're outside of their space vehicle to a solar particle event, this could be a very, very serious situation.
Dr. Borak said that this dosimeter monitors doses of radiation a person receives and transmits up-to-the-minute information to a computer. Cancer patients here on Earth who undergo new forms of radiation therapy using protons or carbon ions, said Borak, could also benefit from the dosimeter.
When you're delivering radiation to a cancer patient, you're trying to deliver an extremely high dose to the